This meeting is now being recorded.
That's okay. Well, I'd like to welcome everyone, and good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the new GTLD, Subsequent Procedure Sub-Team Track 2, Legal Regulatory Issues Call on the 14th of September, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call today. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn the meeting over to Jeff Newland.
Thanks, Michelle. Welcome, everyone. We have an agenda on the side there on the in the notes section. For those of you wondering, I am chairing this call. I agreed to chair. Michael will be the co-leaders, Michael and Phil. While they're here now, they're going to be in and out, and therefore I agreed to kind of take up the mantle for this discussion. The agenda will do any SOI updates and really spend the bulk of time talking about the CC2 comment on specifically closed generics. This is a topic that will more than likely, or very likely, go into the next Work Track 2 call as well. So today we'll focus on the comments that were received with a couple questions at the end for us to talk about. And then next time, depending on some of the feedback we get today and over email, we'll talk about potential proposals that could be made, and we can talk about whether they have merit or not. So with that said, I'll ask now if there's anyone that wants to add any other business. I guess that's the way you would say it. Okay, not seeing anyone adding anything else. Of course, I'll ask at the end of the meeting anyway. So if you have anything else you want to discuss, feel free to bring that up at that time. Are there any updates to statements of interest? Okay, not seeing any. One thing I do want to add before I get to the CC2 comments is just a kind of plenary update. Our next call is not until September 25th because we had one this week, but I did just send around an email to the full working group about the co-chair slash vice chair position that's opening up when Avery is promoted to the board at the end of the ICANN meeting in Abu Dhabi. So I just wanted to point everyone to that email. Of course, feel free to send any questions if you have it on email or any nominations. Essentially, I'm asking for nominations by the, I guess, just ending prior to the call on the 25th, and I've at least recommended in that email a separation between people that would be eligible for a co-chair position versus a vice chair position, and a short description of what I personally believe are the differences in the roles. But again, that's out for feedback for anyone that wants to provide that feedback. Any questions on that before I do recognize that there has already been a nomination, so that's great, but we have to open that up to the full working group, so that's why we're giving a 9-day or so period. Okay, not seeing any questions on that. We are continuing our discussion on registrant protections. And Michelle, am I controlling the slides or is it unlocked for everyone?
It is unlocked for everyone.
Okay, great. That's great. That's fine. What we're going to do then on slide 3, again, we're going to spend the next two meetings on closed generics. And then on the 28th, because remember we're meeting weekly, we're going to talk about application terms and conditions. So closed generics, I guess, was kind of grouped in with the category of registrant protections, but really what we're talking about is closed generics. So a recap of where we are. We've spent a couple sessions already talking about views on closed generics. This is a topic we've been asked to address by the NGPC, or the former NGPC, essentially the ICANN board, really that made a decision in 2012 to not allow closed generics to move forward, even though there was no policy developed at the time that the guidebook was created. So they have called upon us to see if we can provide any policy advice or input. And again, just our current operating principle is that if we are unable to come to consensus on a new solution, then the status quo from the 2012 round will apply. So that as kind of the background. So far, our discussions have focused both on the positives, or I should say on the those supporting closed generics, as well as the discussions of those that do not support having closed generics. The arguments, this is just a recap. They're obviously much, much more sophisticated, and we'll get into those when we talk about the comments. But essentially, those that support closed generics have mentioned that they believe it promotes business model innovation, competition, can lead to greater consumer choice, supports the notion of freedom of expression, and gets or keeps ICANN out of the regulation of business models and trying to discern which domains are, quote, generic and which top-level domains are not generic. Those that generally do not favor closed generics have made the argument that it actually could harm competition. It really favors, according to their comments, industry players, can confuse end users into believing that there may be multiple sources of companies or entities providing content on that site. And in some respects, some people believe it may hinder freedom of expression because it gives certain players or one player an exclusive right to use that generic term at the top level. So there were a lot of public comments that were received on this, and we'll talk about just kind of the themes that came out. The comments basically said that that there was no really. Some of the comments expressed a problem about there's no clear definition about who we're trying to protect. Are we trying to protect ultimately consumers? Are we trying to protect registrars? Are we trying to protect registrants to register names? And each of these parties are very different. We'll talk about each of those issues. And ultimately, I think one thing we really want to explore is that if there is a path forward where we would allow some closed generics to go forward, we'll obviously need to clearly define those circumstances in which closed generics would be allowed, but also discuss how any of the public interest concerns could be mitigated and ultimately enforced. So that's pretty much at the high level of where we ended up prior to the CC2 questions and comments coming in. So the first question that was responded to by a number of parties was just a general question about, that whether we should continue the current rule prohibiting closed generics for subsequent application windows, why or why not? And on the side of allowing closed generics, I'm on slide 6 right now, some sample themes that came across are represented by these comments. Again, for a full full context of each of these comments, it's really helpful to read the full comments that were submitted. But in general, Yannick, and I'll probably pronounce this wrong, so I'll just say Yannick, had in his comment had said that the closed generics should be allowed, that it's impossible to find a definition of a generic term, especially when you consider multiple languages. But if someone applied for a closed string, then it should not be allowed to be opened up at a later point in time. So, I guess what he's saying is that this is not a restriction that would be subject, I guess, to an RCEP or some other, change proposal, that if they applied for the string, as a Spec 13 or some other type of registry, then they should remain that way. The International Trademark Association had a fairly lengthy comment on this, and primarily relates to the definition of a generic string, which has a certain connotation in trademark law. And their point is that in the definition that was provided in the ICANN agreement, they believe that the definition was overly broad and potentially captures brand owners and TLDs that would not be used for a purpose that would otherwise be considered descriptive. And we'll go over some examples a little bit later on when we talk about some of the questions. But their recommendation is that the current rule not permitting closed generics harms or potentially could harm brand owners, even though some protections exist for brand owners with Spec 13. They argue that it's too difficult, if not impossible, to determine exactly what is generic, and terms and words over time may acquire distinctiveness or lose it. And thus their position is that ICANN should not be deciding what is and what is not a generic string, and what is not, and an applicant's request to purchase and operate a closed generic subject to string contentions should be outside the purview of ICANN. So basically saying that ICANN should not really get into regulating these types of models or content. Just taking a pause to see if there's any questions on those comments or if anyone from those groups wants to expand on that or have any questions. Okay, no questions. Go on to the next comment, which is from the business constituency. And they, too, suggest that there should not be a blanket rule prohibiting closed or restricted business models for strings comprised of, quote, generic terms, especially given the ambiguities on how such terms are defined. Allowing registry operators to experiment with a variety of business models facilitates innovation and competition and can result in well-understood communities that benefit users. There's precedent for such a registry model with legacy TLDs such as .mil, .edu, and .gov, which are all comprised of abbreviated dictionary terms, but yet are restricted to specific entities or purposes as a means of developing user trust. Certain proposed generic TLDs may still present legal or public policy issues that are worth addressing, but such current concerns may be dealt with on a case-by-case basis and through existing community-developed mechanisms, such as the objection procedures that we currently have, string confusion, legal rights, community, public interest, etc., which are themselves designed to protect consumers, brands, and the general public. One of the registries, affiliates, maintains that the prohibition should be lifted and states that the program, the GTLD program, should not focus on content and use, but only creating opportunity for new GTLDs. And ICANN should support as many broad ideas as possible. Only this approach will create an environment that fosters innovation. Google also supports the notion of making some changes to the current policy, or I should say the current decision by the NGPC, not necessarily current policy. They say that an unrestricted process for has better potential to unlock innovation, competition, and enhance the utility of the DNS, and that this work to consider whether waiving the broad prohibition on closed generics would support these goals. They believe that even for strings consisting of commonly utilized terms, a more structured and managed registry model may actually provide a benefit in a more secure and innovative namespace. And the registry stakeholder group, fairly similarly states that the objection procedures that exist could handle the consumer concerns and that there are adequate protections, and therefore that this rule should be lifted because there are also no security and stability concerns. They argue that closed generics present exciting opportunities for current and future registries to use domain names in new and exciting ways, subject to protections in the UDRP, etc. And essentially by having this rule, we are really solidifying the model of always selling domain names to the public, kind of the classic use case. And it's in their words, we are creating a protectionist-like rubric around a status quo to benefit only those who follow the same classic business model. So for all of the, well, let me ask, stop now, see if there's any questions on the comments we got in support of lifting the restrictions. Jim, please.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks. Jim Prendergast. I wouldn't necessarily characterize it as supportive, but, Aphilius's comment kind of struck me a little bit in the sense that they're lying about, I'm just going back to it, just to, the program should not be focused on content and use. Unfortunately, round one is littered with examples of GAC early warnings, GAC objections, other types of objections that are based on content and use. So I don't know if that's, if that's the type of argument that's going to hold some water going forward.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. I think that's right, certainly for round one, that there were certainly a number of advice points that were issued by the GAC that were based on content and use as opposed to, on content and use, and that still goes on in the ICANN community. So I think it's certainly an argument that still is being presented, but even if we could, I guess in Aphilius's mind, reduce the areas in which we focus on content and use, that would be beneficial. There's a question from Justine. Do we know if Yannick represents any stakeholder group? Is his potentially the only comment from a non-commercial group? Justine, that's a great question. If I can ask ICANN staff maybe to just quickly look at that. I think at the beginning of his letter he does describe. Oh, maybe Jim can answer that question. Jim?
Yeah, I believe he's with Demis, which is a, I believe is a Scotland-based brand protection outfit.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Jim. That's, so they're a corporate, a corporate registrar as well. So they represent brands. I'm not sure, and we can look over the comments, whether there were, any comments we received from those other than the, as you put it, the commercial groups. I do know that on previous calls, in thinking back, there was seemingly a split I'm not sure how evenly split that was, but I do remember, for example, Kathy Kleiman and some others from the non-commercial groups supported the current restrictions, while Robin Gross and some others, I believe Milt Mueller, spoke at one of the meetings in favor of lifting those restrictions. So I'm not sure if there's any kind of unified position from non-commercials, but rather a split depending on individual points of view. And Justine says, thanks. This, then his is not a community comment. Jeff, yes, that's what I wanted to get at. Thanks. Aubrey, please.
Yeah, just quickly, Aubrey speaking. As a member of the non-commercials at that time, I will basically indicate that indeed the non-commercials very much remain split on the issue. Those that are very strongly supportive of lifting the restrictions and those that believe that the restrictions are apt and belong. And we live in peace about it. You know, we work on compromise on our positions, but we do remain split on the issue.
Yeah, thanks, Aubrey. That's helpful, especially because you were around for during that time period with the non-commercials. So getting to the comments that were not supportive of lifting the restrictions or stated otherwise, supported continuing the restrictions, the GAC, who initially filed in its Beijing communique that their objections to closed generics naturally raised its initial communique and advice. And just to remind everyone, they argued that strings that represent generic terms, four strings that represent generic terms, exclusive registry access should serve a public interest goal. The GAC identified a non-exhaustive list of strings that it considered to be generic terms, where the applicant was proposing to provide exclusive registry access. The GAC's advice is based on principles of promoting competition and consumer protection. So I will note that the GAC, at least from my reading of this, the GAC is not saying that exclusive registries should never be allowed. It's really saying that for exclusive registries of generic terms, there should be some public interest goal, which could, if you take it a step further, could mean that an applicant maybe or should be allowed to, even if there are restrictions, to present arguments as to why allowing their string to be an exclusive use registry would, in fact, promote competition and consumer protection. So even though the NGPC kind of interpreted their advice as basically a complete restriction, I note that the GAC never really said there should be a complete restriction. Perhaps this is one area that we can specifically ask members of the GAC to weigh in on at a later point. NORID, which if someone could help me what that abbreviation stands for, if there's anyone that knows what that organization, every time I see the word NORAD, I think of NORAD, which is something completely different in the United States.
Hey, Jeff, it's the .no registry.
Ah, thank you. Okay, so the .no registry states that we suppose you here mean true generics, such as word, boat, car, book, etc. Our comments above under 2.2.1, They say that these words, in their opinion, should not be allowed to be closed for use of the registry operator and or its affiliates. The reasoning behind this view is that these words would never have been accepted as a brand and received trademark protection. No one should be the only one to be allowed to use a true generic word. So I'm looking for someone on this call that actually has an IP trademark background other than myself. I see a couple. But if they're willing to, if I take off my chair hat and as a former, I guess still current trademark attorney, I would argue that generic words do receive trademark protections if they are being used in their non-generic sense. In other words, Apple is one of those that has a trademark. They don't use it for selling of the food Apple, and if they had been using their mark with selling apples instead of computers, then I'm sure that is correct. They would not have received trademark protection. So I'm not, if anyone else wants to weigh in on that, that has a trademark perspective, please feel free to do so. Heather says, international law requires that jurisdictions protect signs, including generic terms, that have acquired distinctiveness. So, Heather, in English, for those that are not trademark attorneys that understand the words acquired distinctiveness. Thanks, Heather, please.
Can you hear me? You know, my speaker's on.
Heather, it's a little bit low, but just continue and let's see if we can hear you.
Hang on, let's see if that's better. Is that better?
Yeah.
Good. The short answer on this is this. What we're looking for, I'm going to, excuse me while I lapse into Professor Moan here. We're looking for a triangular relationship, essentially. You can pull any word out of the dictionary, and to the extent that you can make a triangle out of it, meaning that you can connect on seeing that sign, the term used by the law. We're talking words, symbols. In our case, we're dealing with words, terms. Connect that particular term to a trader and that particular trader's goods or services that are offered in commerce. So to the extent that that word has another meaning. Now, of course, if you make up a word from scratch, that has one and only one meaning, and we have then an, if you like, inherent distinctiveness. It has only one meaning. So anything out there that has more than one meaning, what we're looking for is that the consumer is able to recognize that additional meaning. So hence, to use your example, Jeff, of apple, we all recognize in the English language that apple is a fruit, but many of us, through our commercial relationship with the company that sells the computers, sees the name and the symbol and thinks not just the fruit, but thinks, I know those folks, they are the folks who make those computers and put those computers on the market. So hopefully that is helpful. That's something that is required, as I wrote in the comment there, required under international law. Any member of the World Trade Organization, which is most members or most countries in the world, are required to protect those terms in that way. Now, mind you, if you haven't achieved that consumer recognition, you're not going to get protection. But if you have, international law requires that your country recognize that. Thanks.
Thanks, Heather. And would another way of saying or adding to this be, you could say that in trademark law, context matters, right? So the way that it's being used or proposed to being used completely matters to whether that term is protected. And so, yeah, great. So Heather says, yes, context is a significant part of consumer recognition. Great. So moving on to the other comments, and as I'm trying to scan, Trang also points out that ICANN's implementation of GAC Category 2 advice can be viewed at that link. One of the questions I have for Trang, and maybe it could come up later, is I know that those that wanted to still maintain their registries as exclusive use, even though they were on the GAC Category 2 list, were permitted to make arguments as to why they should continue to be allowed. There were not that many of those Category 2 strings that actually did file responses as to why. Many of those, and I know off the top of my head, Safeway, that wanted to use grocery, ended up just basically withdrawing and quitting. My question for Trang was how many of those, so there were 12 applications, as Trang says, that stated it was their intent to operate exclusive use. I can't ask those applicants to provide a response. And Trang, were any of those responses accepted, or were most of them either put on hold or withdrawn? And if there were any that were accepted, I'm assuming that's public, and what were the reasons that they were allowed to continue, if they were? So while that is... While Trang's typing, and she may not have the answers right off the top of her head, but if she does, that would be fantastic. Okay, so Trang says, I can't recall how many of the 12 ultimately decided to stay exclusive. Trang will check. So, yeah, the question is how many decided to remain exclusive, and how many of them then were allowed by ICANN, or did ICANN accept the public interest comment response? And are in operation today. I know of those 12, a number of them did actually withdraw, but I'm not aware off the top of my head of any that presented an argument that were actually allowed to go forward as an exclusive registry. So if we can kind of put that as an action item, make sure we follow up on that one. Going on, excuse me, to slide 10, Jim, who's on this call, made the argument that that the ban essentially should be extended for future rounds, making the argument that while the process that developed with the prohibition on closed generics was messy and open to improvement, the result is an appropriate one. Jim, we didn't put down anything additional from your response. If you are willing, can you give maybe a minute or two on the rationale? Thanks, Jim, please.
Yep, sure. It's Jim Prendergast. I mean, I don't think there's a person who would argue with the beginning of my sentence there that this process is pretty darn ugly. I mean, this was, you know, some may say it was the board making policy and not the community. I would argue that it was inherently unfair to applicants when there were no prohibitions on closed generics and people applied in good faith, and then this process kicked into play and suddenly they were faced with a dilemma. And I think, you know, this raises, I think, a basic question of fairness as it relates to the process both for the last round and the process going forward, and that is, you not only have the 12 applicants that Trang has identified that stuck to their guns, so to speak, but you have several others who either backed out before it got to that process or, in essence, were forced to change their business model to something that was not their original intent to comply with what was a take-it-or-leave-it contract. Folks were told that ICANN was not going to negotiate the contract, and clearly stated in the contract was inserted a provision by the board that said there was a prohibition on closed generics. So going forward, I don't know how you suddenly allow closed generics to happen and still maintain some sort of fairness to the applicants that went before where this was foisted upon them without any sort of due process. And, you know, as a result, either people backed out, people changed business models, or people held their nose and signed a registry agreement. So I think there needs to be a backward-looking component to this that talks, you know, that looks at how previous applicants were treated as a result of this and are future applicants being advantaged over those previous applicants. Thanks.
Yep, sure.
Thanks, Jim. And one question before I go to Aubrey. So I'll take Aubrey's comment, maybe if you want to get back into the queue. If absent the fairness argument, which is it's a strong argument and certainly one we would need to consider, if we were able to, from a fairness standpoint, address or figure out a way to address those from the previous applicants, assuming we were starting from a completely empty slate, would you have any arguments that would be opposed to allowing closed generics? I guess what I'm asking for is if we started with a clean slate, and this would be important to set forth in the preliminary report, if our recommendation, if we were starting from scratch, we would recommend this to allow it, but based on fairness argument, our recommendation would not be to allow it. I guess I'm trying to get your opinion on a substance point of view and not diminish at all the fairness argument. Argument, but I'm just... Aubrey, are you...
Oh, okay, we hear you. I couldn't hear you, but all of a sudden I can hear you again. Okay. This is Aubrey. Yeah, I just wanted to make, I think, maybe one or two points. One of them is still the scope of our PDP, which is not to be making decisions on what happened in the past. Another one is that if indeed we decide that the fairer thing, let's say if we get into talking about fairness, is to change the rules for everyone in the future, then there have been examples in the GNSO of taking a new set of either responsibilities or issues that are put into place for new things and making PDP decisions, separate PDP decisions, about applying them or redressing them somehow with the old. But I think we have to keep them separate in this group in terms of making fair decisions going forward and sort of not sort of say, well, it's been unfair in the past, therefore it must be unfair forever. But I think we also just have to take into account that this PDP is about what comes next. A separate PDP can decide how to make it fair for the past if that's what the GNSO and or others want to do. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Aubrey. And I'm just waiting to see if Jim has been able to rejoin us. So I will wait till he indicates that, but just reiterate Aubrey's point that our job is to implement policy, and lessons learned based on the last round, and fairness can certainly be a component when it comes to implementation. But if we could, or if we felt, and we had consensus, that if we were starting from scratch, we would we would have a different policy. We should state that in a preliminary report, but also make the point that Jim has made, which is that, you know, this may not be seen as fair to those that were not allowed to do this in the 2012 round, and any implementation of this recommendation may want to address that issue, which, as Avery said, is not really within our scope or charter. Jim is now on Do Not Disturb. Jim, are you back in? I'll just ask to see if you can hear us. Okay. While we wait, sorry, it says someone else is an active speaker. Jim, is that you? Okay. While we wait for Jim, we can move on to the next comment and then put him back in the queue if he's able to come on. The ALAC submitted a comment that said that permitting closed generics could impact both consumer choice and consumer confusion. I know that there is probably more to that comment since it was put in the support the restrictions continuing. Cheryl, don't want to put you on the spot, but if you do have some context, that would be great. If not, perhaps we can put that as an action item to just make sure for the next call that we have that context. Cheryl's typing. Ah, Cheryl's got no audio in. Okay, so we'll put that as an action item to make sure we have the context from the ALAC comment. But Cheryl's typing as well, so maybe we'll get an answer. And Nominet says basically their conclusion is on balance, we agree with the ban on closed generics for the foreseeable future. And I think that's an excerpt from their response to the next question. So we'll get into more of their response when we talk about 2.4.2. Moving on then to the next question, which states that, okay, so assume that we do have this ban on generic, or we don't, or we have some sort of restrictions or something, you know, are there any suggestions on how to define the term generic in the context of new GTLDs? Currently, it's defined in the agreement under specification 11.3 as meaning, quote, a string consisting of a word or term that denominates or describes a general class of goods, services, group, organization, or things, as opposed to distinguishing a specific brand of goods, services, groups, organizations, or things from those of others. Are there any modifications needed to the definition? If so, what are the changes? If the exclusion of closed generic TLDs is to be maintained, are there any circumstances in which an exemption should or could be granted? Michael, you have a comment, please.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, thanks.
My question is, on the current restriction to closed generics, specifically speaking, that restriction itself is only in regards to the 2012 applicants, correct? That's not necessarily the rule for how we have to move forward. In this PDP, we need to establish what the rule or what the path forward will be, regardless of whether that's to restrict closed generics or to allow for a compromise of sorts. But saying that the current standard is to restrict closed generics, I'm not sure if that exactly holds up specifically.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. For those that were having a hard time hearing, Michael's point was that the NGPC in their resolution, when they stated that closed generics would be prohibited, only stated that it would be prohibited for the 2012 round, said that and didn't make any recommendations as to subsequent application windows. So Michael's point is that although we have a general rule in this group that the status quo is maintained absent any consensus, Michael is making the point that there is no, there specifically in this case, may not be a status quo because the NGPC specifically said it was only intended for the 2012 round and therefore would not be in existence. I think what I would say to that is that best case scenario is we are able to make a recommendation on this and we're able to get to a consensus as the way it should be. Absent that, generally, our position in this group has been that status quo doesn't necessarily mean the just the existing policy, but it also includes the way things were ultimately implemented. So understand Michael's argument, and it's a really good one and probably deserves some conversation if we are unable to reach consensus on one way or the other. So I'm going to ask that ICANN staff keep this as a discussion item contingent on us not being able to reach consensus. So hopefully that makes sense. Michael's got a drop. Thanks, Michael. We'll talk to you next week. Just looking to see if there's other comments. Okay. Trying to move a little bit on this because I realize we only have 10 minutes left. NORAD, Nominate, the BC, RYSG, ALAC expressed comments saying that to the extent that the rule does remain in place, even though not all of those groups supported the rule remaining in place, but to the extent that it does, they argue that the current definition seems to be adequate and clear and should be maintained. Moving on to the next slide, 13, BC Affiliates and Registry Stakeholder Group noted that it's not necessary to define what is generic if we lift the restriction. So that's their point, which obviously makes a lot of sense if we do decide to lift the restriction. And then the INTA on slide 14 states that should ICANN maintain the rule against closed generics, to be clear that those applicants or there should be exceptions to those applicants that may not qualify as dot brands under Spec 13, but can provide evidence adequate to prove that the string is used as a source identifier. So essentially what they're saying is either some brands had proposed certain strings that they may not have had a trademark in, but certainly you could identify those products or services with a particular supplier. An example off the top of my head would be something like .office, which was not able to get Spec 13 protection, but did qualify for Spec 9 as well. The Spec 9 code of conduct. Another one is, in theory, .broadway, which was applied for or ultimately won by the Broadway League and Broadway.com in a joint venture. And certainly those two entities are identified with Broadway. So there's a discussion of potential exceptions. and John Poole. I'm not sure I 100% understand this argument, but he argues that changes should be made dealing with collisions, universal acceptance issues, trademarks, and service marks. I'm not sure where that fits in, but perhaps we can get some clarity. And Norid makes a comment on slide 15 that brands are definitively not generic terms. Neither are geographical names in most cases, which I won't not discuss that part of it at this point. Among the words that have been accepted as GTLDs, there are many that are specific given names that legally would not have been characterized as generic. When discussing if closed generics should be allowed, you have to separate true generics from pseudo-generics. True generics should not be allowed to be closed, but to be free to certain conditions under which registrants are allowed to register at the second level. That's an interesting comment, and it'd be great to have a little bit more context from that. I'm not sure how trademarks and pseudo-trademarks, or sorry, generics and pseudo-generics are defined, but it's possible their comments got some more about that. Before I get to the last slide, as I know we're running out of time, Trang has posted a very helpful copy and paste of a couple of items. I'm going to start backwards. So of the 12 that indicated they will operate as exclusive registries, 7 of them withdrew, so that only left 5. 1 obtained a Spec 13 food. The remaining 5 signed the RA, which includes Spec 11. Spec 11 has a provision that says, registry operator of a generic string may not impose eligibility criteria for registering names in the TLD that essentially limits registrations only to themselves and their affiliates. So it would be interesting to figure out which of those were and kind of look at how they've used it. So the next comment from Trang, Trang says, sorry, that should say the remaining 4. Right. So 7 withdrew, 1 was approved as a Spec 13, and the 4 others signed RAs and are required to adhere to those. So those were, so the 4 were Dot Grocery, which I thought that one was withdrawn. But I'll double check that. Maybe I'm misremembering. .dvr, .data, and .phone. So we should, as an action item, take a look and see how those TLDs are being used. Finally, I have a slide which will continue on for the next call. Essentially, it's for us to think about, do we agree with maintaining the current definition that's in the guidebook of the term closed generic? Question 2 is, do we agree with the notion that all applicants that qualify as a Spec 13 brand TLD should be exempt from the prohibition of closed generic TLDs? And I've put some bullet points there saying that despite some of these terms being dictionary terms, they were allowed. Why were they allowed? Presumably because they're not being used in their, quote, dictionary or generic sense. So examples include Apple, Food, Beats, Boots, Case, Chase, Crown, Discover, Duck, Farmers, Fire, Fox, Gap, Google, Loft, Star, etc. All of these are Spec 13. Trang points out that Safeway's grocery was withdrawn, but the one that was delegated was from Walmart. Got it. Okay. So we should look and see how those are being implemented or being used, if at all. So the reason I put question two in there is that there's this odd provision in spec two, or sorry, in spec 13, that says that spec 13 registries will also comply with the provision in that defines in spec 11, which is really strange to me. So I don't know how they comply with it. Just maybe a contradiction in terms. So we need to either outright state that, look, if you qualify as a spec 13, you're allowed to operate an exclusive registry and not have that amorphous provision in that spec 13, which I should have had prepared for this call, but we'll go over on the next call. And if we agree that there are any restrictions on the use of a TLD that should, or if we agree with, with the notion of allowing some closed generics to go forward, are there any restrictions on the use of the TLD that should be put in place other than those already set forth in Spec 13? And if we agree that some closed generics should be allowed to go forward, what are some enforcement mechanisms, if any, that should be put in place? So we will continue with those on the next call. Are there any other questions or any other business that anyone wants to discuss on this call? I am not seeing anyone, any comments, so I will close this call at exactly 1 hour. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. The meeting has been adjourned. Everyone have a good day. Bye-bye.